This is an excerpt from William Cooper's description of how to found a settlement, which he did in upstate New York from 1785 to 1790. And Cooper said, "I began with the disadvantage of a small capital and the encumbrance of a large family, and yet I have already settled more acres than any man in America. There are 40,000 souls now holding directly or indirectly under me, and I trust that no one among so many can justly impute to me any act resembling oppression. I am now descending into the vale, that is the end of life, and I must acknowledge that I look back with self-complacency upon what I have done and am proud of having been an instrument in reclaiming such large and fruitful tracts from the waste of the creation. In 1785, I visited the rough and hilly country of Otsego, where there existed not an inhabitant nor any trace of a road. I was alone, 300 miles from home, without bread, meat, or food of any kind. Fire and fishing tackle were my only means of subsistence. I caught trout in the brook and roasted them on the ashes. My horse fed on the grass that grew by the edge of the waters. I laid me down to sleep in my watch coat, nothing but the melancholy wilderness around me. In this way, I explored the country, formed my plans of future settlement, and meditated upon the spot where a place of trade or a village should afterwards be established. In May 1786, I opened the sales of 40,000 acres, which in 16 days were all taken up by the poorest order of men. I soon after established a store and went to live among them, and continued so to do till 1790, when I brought on my family. For the ensuing 4 years, the scarcity of provisions was a serious calamity. The country was mountainous, there were neither roads nor bridges, but the greatest discouragement was in the extreme poverty of the people, none of whom had the means of clearing more than a small spot in the midst of the thick and lofty woods, so that their grain grew chiefly in the shade. Not one in 20 had a horse, and the way lay through rapid streams, across swamps, and over bogs. If the father of a family went abroad to labor for bread, it cost him 3 times its value before he could bring it home, and all the business on his farm stood still till his return. I resided among them and saw too clearly how bad their condition was. I erected a storehouse and during each winter filled it with large quantities of grain purchased in different places. I procured from my friend Henry Drinker a credit for a large quantity of sugar kettles. He also lent me some potash kettles, which we conveyed as best we could, sometimes by partial roads on sleighs and sometimes over the ice. By this means, I established potash works among the settlers and made them debtor for their bread and laboring utensils. I also gave them credit for their maple sugar and potash at a price that would bear transportation. And the first year after the adoption of this plan, I collected in one mass 43 hogsheads of sugar and 300 barrels of pot and pearlash, worth about $9,000. This kept the people together and at home, and the country soon assumed a new face. I had not funds of my own sufficient for the opening of new roads, but I collected the people at convenient seasons, and by joint efforts, we were able to throw bridges over the deep streams and to make, in the cheapest manner, such roads as suited our then humble purposes. This was the first settlement I made and the first attempted after the Revolution. It was, of course, attended with the greatest difficulties. Nevertheless, to its success, many others have owed their origin. It was, besides, the roughest land in all the state and the most difficult of cultivation of all that has been settled. But for many years past, it has produced everything necessary to support and comfort a man. It maintains at present 8,000 souls with schools, academies, churches, meeting houses, turnpike roads, and a market town. It annually yields to commerce large droves of fine oxen, great quantities of wheat and other grain, abundance of pork, potash in barrels, and other provisions. Merchants with large capitals and all kinds of useful mechanics reside upon it. The waters are stocked with fish, the air is salubrious, and the country thriving and happy. If the poor man who comes to purchase land has a cow and a yoke of cattle to bring with him, he is of the most fortunate class. But as he will probably have no money to hire a laborer, he must do all his clearing with his own hands. Having no pasture for his cow and oxen, they must range the woods for subsistence. He must find his cow before he can have his breakfast, and his oxen before he can begin his work. Much of the day is sometimes wasted, and his strength uselessly exhausted. Under all these disadvantages, if in 3 years he attains a comfortable livelihood, he is pretty well off. His children, yet too young to afford him any aid, require a school and are a burden upon him. His wife, bearing children and living poorly in an open house, is liable to sickness. If then, in addition to all this, he should be pressed by his landlord, he sinks under his distress. But if at this critical moment he be assisted and encouraged, he will soon begin to rise. Indeed, justice and policy combine to point out the duty of the landlord. For if a man has struggled 10 years in vain and is at the end of that time unable to pay, not only humanity but self-interest dictates another course and some new expedient for reciprocal advantage. So here the tenant, instead of being driven for the principal, will not only keep his possession, but retain the privilege of reacquiring the principal at a future day by the very produce of the lands. He will be happy in the idea of still preserving his home, will pay his rent with cheerfulness, and the landlord has so much certainly added to his capital, whether the tenant repurchases the fee or not, the improvements if he does purchase it, and if not, the price agreed upon. Such rich theorists let the property they purchase lie unoccupied and unproductive and speculate upon a full indemnity from the future rise in value, the more so as they feel no want of the immediate profits. But I can assert from practical experience that it is better for a poor man to pay 40 shillings an acre to a landlord who heads the settlement and draws people around him by good plans for their advancement and arrangements for their convenience, than to receive 100 acres gratis from one of these wealthy theorists. For if 50,000 acres be settled so that there is but one man upon 1,000 acres, there can be no one convenience of life attainable. Neither road, school, church, meeting, nor any other of those advantages without which man's life would resemble that of a wild beast. Of this, I had full proof in the circumstances of the Burlington Company. They were rich and purchased a tract of 69,000 acres and made a deed of gift of 100 acres out of each 1,000 to actual settlers. And this they were bound to do in compliance with a condition in the king's patent. They provided these settlers with many articles of husbandry under the particular agency of Mr. Nathaniel Edwards. But he very soon returned, and not long afterwards the settlers followed, stating that they could not support themselves so far in the woods in that scattered situation. I then resided in Burlington. And when I undertook to make the settlement on those very lands where so rich a company had failed, it was thought a romantic undertaking for a man unprovided with funds to attempt what gratuitous donations had not been able to achieve. Nevertheless, I succeeded, and for that very reason that I made no partial gifts, but sold the whole at a moderate price with easy payments, having for myself a handsome profit. And people were readily induced to come when they saw a number of cooperators and the benefits of association. You have now before you, as well as I can explain, the advantages and the difficulties which belong to an enterprise in new lands. But let me be clearly understood in this, that no man who does not possess a steady mind, a sober judgment, fortitude, perseverance, and above all, common sense, can expect to reap the reward which to him who possesses those qualifications is almost certain. That was William Cooper in A Guide in the Wilderness.